Hey, this is David Kaufman here, the voice of Jimmy Olsen from Superman the Animated Series, and you are listening to Superman the Animated Podcast.
And welcome to Superman the Animated Podcast. I'm your host, Nathan McKenzie. In this podcast, I'm currently talking about Superman the Animated Series, which ran for three seasons, comprising of 54 episodes. And currently, we're talking about the third and final season. For this episode, I'm once again joined by the hosts of the DCAU Review Podcast, Cal and Liam. Welcome back to the podcast, guys.
Glad to be back.
Yeah, we're it doesn't seem like that long ago that we were here, but at the same time, in like Earth time, it's also been like feels like years. So thanks for having us back, Nathan. Appreciate it.
No, I love having you guys on, especially the fact that you guys do pretty much a retrospect of all the DCAU shows. And who better to have on to talk about Batman as well, being your favorite character, Cal, as well. And you know, Liam and I are on the other fence with Superman, but you know. What a great trio to have to talk about this current this particular episode. So, like I said, very excited to have you both on. If you've got everyone remembers, Cal and Liam were on recently in the season when we spoke about Nighttime, which was a lot of fun. And I think it almost snuck into the top five episodes of. So there you go. That just goes to show how popular that episode was. So, So what have you guys both been up to since we've last spoke?
Man, well, we've realized which a problem you might come across soon enough, seeing as how you're in the third and final season, is we realized that some of the stuff you have a limited finite. It feels like you have forever to review it, but something like this, an evergreen static finite amount of episodes, you have to figure out, well, what do I do when we run out of this content? So we introduced this concept specifically with some of the particular series, Batman Beyond, Superman the Animated Series. We did our first Justice League one the other day, actually, or a couple months ago. But the spotlight episodes, where instead of reviewing a specific episode of one of the series, Batman or Superman or Justice League, we take a particular character and we kind of do an overview of their maybe part of or all of their story arc, depending on how important of a character they are, and then talk a little bit about what they did in the comics and action figure tie-ins and stuff like that. So that's been something that we've been real excited about. It's given us some fresh stuff to talk about with some of these characters. It also allows us to go back and re-review some of the episodes that we talked about, you know, back in 2018. You know, when we first started the podcast. So that's been a cool thing that we've started. And this month we had to balance things out. Batman Beyond, we're running low on those episodes. And we actually kicked off our first episodic coverage of what has to be Liam's favorite a show in all of the DC. And that being the very well-known and loved The Zeta Project. Which was a spinoff from the Batman Beyond series, which got very little airplay and fanfare here in the U.S. is very sort of loosely, barely connected to the DCAU. But because there is continuity and crossovers between it and Batman Beyond, we technically have to review it. So much to our chagrin, we came to our very first review of that also. And Liam had a blast.
No, you're always hoping if you're reviewing something, and I'm sure Nathan, like when you've gotten to certain episodes of Superman that maybe have a more obvious reputation, such as I know you just recently covered Unity on your show. I know, like you're hoping you'll be proved wrong, right? Like you're hoping like it's gonna be good. It's gonna be like we can find something here that maybe we didn't notice when we were younger and reviewing this for the first time, and we can like find the silver lining in the cloud. So far we've only done one Zeta, but you know, it's we got 25 more to do. it seems a little bit like a bit of an insurmountable task at the moment. But it's, as Cal said, it's been fun sort of introducing some of these other elements, like the spotlight character episodes and kind of taking on a different look and a way to look back on something, especially, you know, for if we have listeners that, you know, haven't been with us since day one and, you know, maybe don't want to go all the way back to our first few episodes when we covered some of the big classic episodes of Batman or something. We can kind of take a fresh look at those in our more modern format of our show. And that can kind of be a fun way to extend, as Cal said, also as a byproduct can kind of extend our show and let us kind of go back to stuff we've already talked about. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun kind of experimenting with that stuff and finding different ways to kind of to talk about this stuff that we all love so much.
Well, that's awesome. To be honest, I didn't know about this Ada project until I heard your podcast talking about it. And now that you're starting to talk about it, I'm going to find it somewhere just so I can watch it. Just looking at the images I think you had on your social medias just recently, mm-hmm. I was just going, this looks interesting. But I know you've spoken about it, and I thought, I've only heard about it through you guys talking about it. Mm-hmm. I've never seen, you know, the DVD or anything like that over here in Australia. So it'd be definitely something interesting to... And the fact it's still part of the DCAU, like you said, all good things come to an end. But I love the fact that you guys are reimagining how you're going to go about moving forward. I've come up with different ideas of what I'm going to do moving forward. Like, to me, it's just all about Superman in the animated side of things. So, we're going to start leading towards the movies and all that sort of stuff. So, I love the fact that you guys are going up. We're having so much fun. We don't want to stop. And I've, as with myself, I've just realized I'm having so much fun speaking to yourselves and other people. I thought I should have done this years ago. What was I thinking? And, just talking about Unity, and I think, Cal, you even had a bit of a joke with me last episode. We spoke about it. And the guest I had on, Connor, he loves that episode. And I just love the fact that there's people out there that it doesn't matter what episode you watch, as you were saying before, Liam, but they'll come up this episode and I'll just have so much love for it, even though we look at it and go, yeah, not really my type of thing, but there's episodes out there for everybody. I love the fact that that's what it's there for and we can all enjoy.
Absolutely. It's why we do what we do. If we just wanted to hear our own thoughts, we would literally just sit in a room and do this, but we put it out there for other people to hear our thoughts. And I think it's an easy conversation starter. You know, we both of our podcasts here have social media. So we love to interact with people. And as you said, have other guests on and hear people's thoughts and opinions on things. Otherwise it's just, if you're just hearing your own opinion, it's an echo chamber and you might as well just talk to yourself. So yeah, getting other people's thoughts and the beauty about any piece of art, whether it's something like this and it's a cartoon or it's an actual physical canvas on a wall, you can have 100 people in the room and get 100 different views on what they like about it, what they don't like about it. And nobody's wrong because it's simply an opinion, except mm-hmm. about Unity. That is a terrible episode. I kid. I respect anybody that can find the silver lining in artwork that maybe isn't the best. So,
So pushing forward, I just had a look this morning, and you guys are actually coming across your 200th episode soon. I know you've done a lot of bonus episodes, so you've technically got over that anyway. Have you got anything secretly mm-hmm. planned that you might be looking at doing for the 200, or you haven't really thought about it yet?
Well, funny enough that I don't know if we want to officially say this or not, Cal. If Cal will give me permission to reveal this on here.
I don't care. Have we planned anything? I don't know.
I mean,
we don't plan
our podcast. Just say tentatively right now, funny enough that we're reviewing today's episode, The Demon Reborn. As of now, you're probably looking at a pretty big landmark episode of Batman, the animated series, a two-parter that is the first full introduction of the character of Ra's al Ghul into Batman, the animated series, that being the Demon's Quest parts 1 and 2, which it itself is sort of a pretty faithful adaptation of some really classic Dennis O'Neill and Neil Adams comic books. So as of now, That could change, but it's, but you're getting the scoop here, Nathan. So as of now, here we are, some 6 or 7 weeks out as of this recording. I think that's our plan for 200. That's what we got going so far.
It's a seminal episode. It's an important one. Clearly, this episode really wouldn't make any sense if that episode didn't exist. No. So it's an episode that plays. He reappears again in Batman the Animated Series a couple times. He shows up in Batman Beyond at one point. He shows up in Superman, obviously. So he's a character that really has his, you know, shows up in a bunch of these different shows. We actually had the director of the episode on a prior episode talking specifically an episode that featured Ra's al Ghul very briefly. And it was sort of the introduction to the character. He was behind the scenes pulling the strings. And we had the director of the episode as a guest correspondent on that episode, and hearing some of the things that went into the creation of the DCAU version of this Ra's al Ghul character was just really, really fascinating to hear. And to hear like what went on behind the scenes really kind of like took the appreciation for this character to another level. So I'm excited today, not only for us to look forward to our 200th episode, but to talk about this episode here with you on your wonderful podcast.
Well, thank you. But yeah, I just want to congratulate you both. I know it's not there yet, but congratulations on your 200th episode.
Thank you.
That is a great achievement. You know, like you said, you started back in 2018. And like you said, going through all the avenues that are out there, there's only so much we can talk about, but we can just keep going on forever and ever. And I love, like I said before, I love the fact you come up with a new way of talking about your episode. So I'm just looking forward to the next 100 after that.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Nathan. And we're looking to have you on in the future too, because we got some important crossover episodes once we get to them to have you on to feature. So we're looking forward to having you back on the program also.
I'll be there in a heartbeat. You know that.
Absolutely.
I love it. All right, so let's get into this episode. But today we're talking about the episode titled The Demon Reborn. The episode was aired on the 18th of September in 1999. It was directed by Dan Reber and written by Rick Fogel. Returning voice actors for this episode include Tim Daly as Superman Clark Kent, Kevin Conroy as Batman Bruce Wayne, Dana Delaney as Lois Lane. Now, you guys pronounce his name perfectly. How do you pronounce Alfred's real name? Like, is it Ephraim Zimbalist?
Zimbalist, I believe. Zimbalist? So.
Yeah. Yeah. I just know you guys love the character.
That's right.
The voice actor. So I thought I'd get the professionals to actually pronounce his name for me.
He's a legendary voice actor with lots of things to his credit. There was most famously for the first couple episodes of Batman, the Animated Series, there was another actor that played him. Yep. While he did a fine Alfred voice, it wasn't the Alfred voice, as we always say. So we referred to Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. as hashtag our Alfred because of that, or hashtag my Alfred. he's the Alfred of Alfreds when it comes to the DCAU.
Fantastic. We've got Michael Horse. He's returning as Professor Blackwing after previously voicing a different character. Townsend Coleman returns as the Thug Leader after previously voicing 4 different other characters throughout the series. Jeff Bennett returns as a guard after previously voicing a different character. And John Rabano returns as the news anchor after previously voicing 4 different characters throughout the series. Now, as we spoke about before, today we're introducing 2 new characters and 2 new voice actors to this series. However, one of them was a part of the Batman the Animated Series, that being David Warner as Ra's al Ghul. And Olivia Hussey is as Talia al Ghul. So I'll just put it out there for both of you. Firstly, how did you feel about David Warner returning to reprise his role as Ra's? But were you disappointed the fact that Helen Slater didn't come back to reprise her role as Talia?
So, yeah, I would say definitely think really glad having Mr. Warner back on to play Ra's al Ghul or Ra's al Ghul, depending on which version of him. I don't think there's a wrong answer there. I think Ra's is actually closer to like what the Arabic pronunciation would be, like the actual pronunciation of the language would be. But I think they could call him Ra's mostly in the show. But because he's really been the only, at least like high profile Ra's al Ghul in animation. Obviously, you also have Liam Neeson playing him in the live action movies. Yeah. and things like that. But he's definitely the, you know, he's the archetypal voice that I think I hear in my head if I read a comic that features that character in it. So it was good to have him back. And, you know, it's funny, Cal already mentioned if we had not reviewed an episode with Helen Slater as Talia already, I might not have even noticed or would have known without looking up that it was a different actress. But I do think there's a little difference. I don't think it's necessarily like a big deal, but I do have a more of a fondness, I think, for the original Batman the Animated Series voice actress for Talia after reviewing that episode Off Balance that she is a really big part of with the series director Kevin Altieri.
Yeah, I concur with that. I think there were a couple of cute stories that the director of that episode had specifically about Miss Slater and just her like wandering into the recording studio and just sitting down at a piano that was there and just started playing and singing along in between recording sessions. And, you know, how blown away Mr. Altieri was at just watching this professional just sit there and just, you know, vibe, if you will, with the piano and sing. And so I think there is a little bit of something that's missing. She has a little bit, I feel like a little bit more warmth to her voice than the young lady that was recast. But it, in the long run, Talia doesn't have that much dialogue, I feel, in this episode, where it's, if you didn't know, you wouldn't notice. Like it's not that different. She does a fine stand in for it. But if you're asking us, yeah, there's a slight something missing there, but it's not that big of a deal.
No, like going through the voice, it was great to see that, you know, that they brought back the original voice actor from Batman the Animated Series, like they've done previously with other, you know, the Rogues Gallery as well. We saw the Penguin, you know, Mad Hatter and stuff recently. And and like for someone who hasn't watched all of the Batman the Animated Series, like for me personally, like I think the actress, you know, portrayed the voice acting reasonably well. But yeah, for some of you guys who've seen all the Batman the Animated Series, it's good to get your ideas and thoughts upon someone else reprising the role. So awesome. Mm-hmm. All right, so without further ado, let's get into this episode, The Demon Reborn. So the episode starts off with a train on its way to Metropolis and seems to be carrying items for a tribal arts exhibit, which according to Clark is right on time. Lois puts her foot in her mouth when she says, "Even the mayor is here. Hard to believe all this commotion over a bunch of beads and blankets." And then she gets caught out from Professor Blackwing. did you like how Lois tried to talk her way out of it here, Liam? Did you like how she like tried to distract herself? Oh, by the way, this is Clark.
Yes, this is some. Yeah, even though she's not a big part player in this episode, I think Dana Delaney as Lois has some really funny moments in that opening scene. She's realized that she sort of put her foot in her mouth and is trying to cover for it by just changing the subject at all by any means necessary there. Yeah, I think she's that's quite a fun little opening to the episode.
I got a question for you, Cal. So
sure.
If you're going to go to an arts, like an exhibition to see something, wouldn't you expect all the pieces to be there rather like, I was trying to ascertain, like, it looks like they're waiting at a train station for this train to arrive so they can see the rest of the artifacts. Like, wouldn't, unless, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't quite get that either. That's a good catch. If you're headed to an art display, you'd think that it'd already be on display, not arriving on a train. And then you assume that even if the train gets there right when you're there, they're not just going to open boxes and have you look at it that way. Yeah. There's going to be an actual presentation of the items done in a nice, orderly, attractive way for the eye to truly appreciate the entirety of a collection, especially a collection that large.
Yeah.
That it has to be transported via a multi-car train. So yeah, I don't quite get. I mean, it was an excuse to have the great train robbery scene, and for Superman, ultimately, we know what comes next. Superman plus a locomotive. Are you kidding me? Like, what? Of course, you're gonna have a Superman scene with a train. But as far as why they would be at a art gallery and the art not be there is definitely quizzical at best.
And as with this series, everything is right on cue. So just as Professor Blackwing goes to say, many of these artifacts haven't left their tribal lands before. they're irreplaceable. As soon as we see that, bam, you know, the train's getting taken over by but as we come to find out, the train is not alone, are they, Liam?
That's right, because we have the introduction of the, they're called like four or five different things, I think, throughout these episodes, and depending on if you're going by the comics or the movies again, but we get Society of Shadows. What do we call them in this episode? I know Batman referred to them, or yeah, I think he refers to them as the Society of Shadows, but we get a bunch of black guys who look like the black suit Spider-Man hijacking the train just as a Superman kind of arrives.
Well, that was my next question. Do you think when they animated these characters, I think they had Spider-Man in mind, Cal, or do you think they just went, oh, I like what Spider-Man, but the headpiece, I just thought I was seeing the black suited Spider-Man. That's all I was looking at.
I don't think there are any coincidences, especially in these Bruce Timm helmed TV series. Bruce Timm was very famously influenced by comic artist Jack Kirby, who was a huge, very important. Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko were two of his huge influences. And if you look at their resumes, it's a lot of Marvel comics, including Spider-Man. Steve Ditko most famously for Spider-Man, more than likely. So I don't think that any time that they get to sneak a little homage in, you know, other famous appearances, even just in Superman, at Dan Turpin's funeral, the original scene at his funeral featured not only a Stan Lee looking character, but some stand-ins for the Fantastic Four and a couple others, because of course Dan Turpin was most famous for being based on Jack Kirby. So you have these things that I don't think, so whenever there's something that looks like something else, my first thought is to say, okay, that was on purpose. So yeah, I think that this was done as a little trick for them to be able to squeeze in these characters that somewhat resemble Spider-Man. And hey, you're never likely to never get a Batman versus Spider-Man cartoon unless, you know, Disney purchases DC Comics 50 years from now. But you know, in the meantime, you see what would happen if Batman ended up getting into a fight with Spider-Man, at least in my opinion.
that's a great level of insight there. And by after hearing what you just said, then 100% agree that they have to be using that as a guideline and go, yeah, we're just going to throw a little bit here, see if anyone notices. And I think this is an Easter egg. I think this kind of stands out. I think we can all see what they were visually, especially, you know, it almost brought me back to Spider-Man No Way Home. I'm going, what, there's three of them? What's going on? But anyway, so I love the next part here when Lois and Clark finds out. Lois says, so someone's getting an early preview. So Clark goes, I'm going to go and get help, which is normally his, you know, I'm going to turn into Superman and save the day. And Lois goes, I'll get the story.
Priorities.
Do you like how they portray Lois in these in this series, Liam? Do you like how, I love Dana Delaney as Lois Lane, but do you love how they portray Lois in this series? Like, I know she has a lot of good, quick one-liners and the like, but you think they portray her as a world-class journalist?
I think we see that enough throughout the series. I think a lot of it does come down to her voice performance, because I think in the series she's doing a lot of screaming and falling off of buildings and things like that. So we don't necessarily get to see too many episodes that really focus in on her as like a journalist or an investigator. But I think that always being kind of at the forefront of her character and what she's after is. And you know, that sort of quest to get the story, get the scoop, or and kind of search for the truth. I think that's always a pretty integral part of Lois. And I think, yeah, that mix of the sarcasm and the quick wit and the always chasing after the story, and then also maybe a little bit of as we see a little bit later in this episode, spoiler alert, a little bit of romantic tension between her and a former flame of hers. So yeah, I think Dana Delaney, especially in this episode, gets to, even though she isn't a big part of it, gets to kind of stretch her legs a little bit, because she's, as we already talked about, she gets to do a little bit of kind of comedic sort of fumbling over her words. And I think that's maybe the defining this version of Lois, that she just very clearly has no filter, and and just whatever she is thinking, she's going to say, you know, very loudly. And And sometimes that's going to get her in trouble.
No, I love it. We'll talk a little bit about her and Bruce later on. But Cal, you got anything you want to add or did agree with Liam?
No, I agree. I think there are two definitive examples of, at least outside of comics, of the portrayal of the Lois Lane character. And one is you can't pass up the original Lois Lane on the big screen. I will say, at least the original Lois Lane on the big screen, from the original Superman movies, from the Christopher Reeve Superman movies. That I think for a lot of people is the Lois Lane, and it's hard to discount that. It's hard to say anything against that because that's such an iconic portrayal of that character. But I think a 1A, or especially for people maybe of a younger generation like us, where those movies maybe didn't mean as much, or maybe they weren't as prevalent as they were at the time, or impactful as those Superman movies were at the time. And I've certainly grown to appreciate them at an older age, but I think this version of Lois Lane is the definitive version that you kind of compare everything afterwards. And, most recently with the Snyderverse and everything, and trying to see that character as the same character, it's hard because I didn't feel like they meshed up very well because of how big this character is in this show, how important she is, and how definitive it feels that this portrayal of her is. So I think I love this portrayal of Lois. I love how strong she is. She's very strong, confident. The trap for Lois Lane is that she's always the damsel in distress. And while Lois finds herself on the show in distress a lot, in need of saving, you almost get the sense that she's so tough that she could eventually figure it out, even if Superman didn't show up. Like, she's just that tough of a character. So I really appreciate that they didn't just simply make this character the woman that's always screaming and needing Superman, that she has a toughness beneath the surface that really kind of makes her stand out, and that she goes toe to toe with Clark and isn't afraid to kind of put him down and try and one up him at every turn. So I enjoy their repartee also.
I think the only thing I would have loved to have seen is we didn't really see, it was almost very similar to the George Reeves Superman, Adventures of Superman, where the relationship between the two characters didn't really happen between her and Superman or her and Clark. Mm-hmm. We didn't really see that. Like, it maybe later on Justice League, there was a bit of a relationship between her and Superman, but it was happening behind the scenes, but we didn't really get to see that, which was unfortunate. But I don't think, still watching the series, I don't, go around, very upset that didn't happen, because I still have still had a great three seasons, but that's probably the only thing I would have loved to have seen from those two characters together. But Dana Delaney is the voice of Lois Lane. Every time I read a comic book and I see Lois, that's definitely my Lois Lane. And I still love all the other, like you said, you spoke about Margot Kidder. I was a big fan of Terry Hatcher and Lois and Clark, and Erica Durance at Smallville,
that's one's very close. I mean, Dana Delaney as Lois on this show is that's like 1 and 1A for me, I think. Yeah. I don't know. I would be too hard for me to pick which one would be the definitive for me, but Erica Durance as Lois on Smallville, I just thought, like, nailing that character from the moment she's first on screen in that show, I think. So yeah, she is right at that level with Dana Delaney for me.
Awesome. So it looks like these things are looking for a particular item, the Shaman staff, which I think is what they referred it to as. And they continue to look for this item. Superman arrives right on cue, as you spoke about before, the great train robbery. Superman just happens to be there. I don't know what it, did these guys not know who Superman was? Liam, do you think they come from wherever they, they just went, oh, we'll just try and take these guys out with chains, and like, they look like they never even knew who Superman was. Like, what the hell were they doing?
They do seem woefully underprepared to deal with him, despite committing this robbery in Metropolis. Yeah. So you have to think that if you're blowing open a hole in the side of a train and trying to rob artifacts, that there's at least a chance Superman's going to show up. But I guess, as we find out in a moment or two here, we Talia did have a backup plan as she sets off the bomb. But as it stands, I do really enjoy that scene, especially coming off of nighttime, where you just sometimes, and it's, I think this always happens with Superman a little bit, but it's like when Superman fights somebody else's rogues gallery and they're just so underprepared to stop a guy like this because they've been fighting a guy in a bat suit for 10 years. And then now they have a guy who can like crack the planet in half by listening real hard that they're trying to stop. And it could be like really, it's almost kind of comedic how sort of feeble they are trying to take down Superman before Talia kind of makes her presence known.
Well, that's just it. I'll put this on to you, Cal, as Liam just brought up again. So Talia, it seems like she knows who Superman is because she causes the big distraction. But she didn't tell, obviously, her partners in crime along the way what was going on. Did you like her little distraction here? Obviously, she had a bit of thought what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's a better strategy than what the other guys did. Just cracking them over the head with sticks didn't seem to work. So we got to try something outside the box here. So yeah, I mean, it adds a little bit of, it clearly sets her apart from the lackeys who are there to just, you know, take the punches from Superman. There's a reason why she's in charge. She's certainly smarter. And, you know, as if her character in Batman, the animated series, is certainly one that's extremely cunning, knows what her assets are and how to use them and how to, I mean, she gets to a point in the animated series, Batman, the animated series, spoiler alert, where, you know, she honestly attempts to entrap Batman into being in a relationship with her and sort of fulfilling what Ra's al Ghul's mission is for the world, which is just complete and total genocide, essentially, in the name of the planet. So, you know, to get that close where, you know, not that Batman was necessarily considering it, but to get that close to the point where you're able to at least present that with Batman, you have to be pretty brilliant. So I think this just reinforces the fact that she is as equally smart and cunning as her father is. Her father is a brilliant mastermind of world, attempting world domination. And she's like a half step behind him, if that. So equally as dangerous and not just concerned with swinging weapons around, but, you know, using the one in her head to sort of try and outsmart Superman, who admits later on that maybe he thinks with his fists sometimes a little too much. So I think this lays the groundwork for him to realize that this is going to be more of a cerebral battle, at least to start.
Did you like the introduction of Batman when Superman's trying to save the train and he just sees the Batmobile go past and he just goes, what?
I love that. Yeah, I love that he, you know, we've obviously had their relationship established, you know, across the series, where they're obviously not, doesn't seem like they're calling each other up and sharing battle stories with each other. So the fact that Superman, you know, gets help from him in stopping this train, but then is a little bit taken aback and sort of demands that the next time that Batman's in town, that he give him a heads up. sort of like, what are you doing in my town? What are you doing in my neck of the woods? But then he sort of backs off and makes it more of a, well, I want to work with you. If you're going to be here, yeah, I want to work with you. I feel like it's still a trust thing. Like, he doesn't completely trust Bruce yet. Mm-hmm. Despite having multiple interactions with him thus far, he still doesn't quite trust that Bruce is going to do the right thing here, and especially in his city.
Yeah, exactly. So as you mentioned before, Cal, so, you know, Batman and Superman are going to try and work together here. Batman talks about Ra's al Ghul, and then he even says Ra's is actually more dangerous than Joker and Lex Luthor combined. Would you agree with that statement, guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think in the sense of, as they've established and as they talk about a little bit later, you know, Ra's al Ghul is this being that's lived for over 600 years and has this vast network of spies and assassins at his disposal. And he's, you know, he's seemingly immortal and everything. Like, it seems he has a little bit more structure. Like, there's more of a hierarchy and like more of a plan than, say, a Joker or a Luthor. Obviously, later on, certainly in like the Justice League era, Lex becomes a little bit more of like a cosmic threat, and, you know, he's teaming up with other big time supervillains, and he gets the robot suit and everything. He's more of a straight up supervillain. So it is interesting to see that line thrown in there. On one hand, I think you could just say it's just a little bit of dialogue to kind of up the stakes to say, yeah, that, oh, this is the most dangerous thing these two have dealt with yet, but at the same time. It's like, yeah, I mean, from a standpoint of just the, he has a, you know, this vast, you know, multi-continent criminal or enterprise that's sort of, you know, for all you know, could be infiltrating, you know, levels of government and has all these, you know, eyes watching everywhere. You do get the feeling that that Ra's al Ghul's organizational skills, at least, are maybe on par, if not above, anything that that Batman and Superman have faced together so far.
Cool. I think it also works as a little bit of exposition too, yeah. Because coming into this, you don't assume that everybody has watched every episode of Batman the Animated Series. For instance, yeah. Yourself, Nathan, it's not yeah. assuming that you've seen every episode of Batman the Animated Series. Even if you've seen a couple here or there, it's very possible mm-hmm. there's, you know, the 80-some, 90-some episodes of Batman the Animated Series. So it's very possible you could have missed an episode or two featuring yeah. Ra's al Ghul. So it works as an exposition to introduce the character in case you're not familiar with or you missed one of those other episodes and you only saw one that featured him. It's a good reminder to the audience at home. Hey, yeah. by the way, this guy, he's a real serious threat here. So Batman's going to use this piece of dialogue here to really enforce that this guy means business. And even though we see what he looks like later, that he's actually a huge deal. It's not just, you know, somebody that Superman's going to be able to handle in, you know, in a flick of the wrist.
No, yeah, you totally agree. And I like the fact the writers actually were thinking about it as well. They actually realized that, oh, if you've seen the Superman the Animated Series, The World's Finest, you know, they obviously had Lex Luthor and the Joker in that. And then going back to Nighttime, we had, Brainiac, but I like the fact that they actually thought about it. Like you said, if you haven't watched Batman the Animated Series, there's no requirement to. We can just let the viewers know that mm-hmm. if you haven't never seen or heard this villain before, this is where he stands in the scope. So yeah, I like the fact that they're thinking about it, and I thought they actually thought about something, which is good. So as Batman and Superman continue to investigate, when you're at Lois's apartment. I love when she walks in her front door. She has a copy of the Daily Planet, looks at the front page and just says, yep, another day, another Pulitzer. but unfortunately, as always, she just happens to have people just casually go into her apartment, doesn't she, Liam? Like,
she's got to get better locks or something. Well, she actually says that herself later in the episode. But
Isn't she in the penthouse apartment too of some high rise? Like, you'd think that they have great, better building security or something, like alarms of some sort. Like, nope, anybody just walks in there all the time, anytime they want.
One thing I did find funny with that scene is I don't know why I thought about it. Like, you see the scene when she opens the wardrobe, you can see that, you know, one of her, you know, iconic purple outfits is actually in the closet. Mm-hmm. And then when we go to the next scene, Clark's in his apartment, he's had a big day, he's chilling out and having Chinese food, he's a hungry boy, there was three things of Chinese food, they're good to go. Just luckily he was watching TV at that time, as we the viewer thought we saw Lois hanging from the clock tower, but one thing I like the fact is, you know, that she decided, well, I'm gonna be in the same outfit that Clark last saw her in. Like, she didn't go in the purple one because that's the outfit that we saw, but she went in the red one. I forgot about this part of the episode, and I actually thought it was Lois initially, but I like the little twist here.
Well, yeah, it's actually funny. We've kind of joked about that because a lot of times in the original Batman the Animated Series run, you kind of just see Bruce Wayne in the same brown suit for like the whole series. whereas when at the start of Superman the Animated Series, they made a point where kind of Lois and Clark at the very least would have three or four outfits that they would kind of alternate, you know, like a gray suit for Clark or the red and black look for Lois, as you mentioned. So yeah, it is kind of a nice touch that they, you know, as you see one of the other outfits that she's always wearing as she goes into the closet there. And then yeah, Talia putting on the outfit that Clark last saw Lois in, you know, the same earlier in that same evening, I think is, yeah, that's a good touch. And of course, and when it looks like Lois is in danger, that's always a good guarantee that Superman's show up. So a good calculated risk here by Talia as she ties herself to a clock tower.
So Cal, what were your thoughts on, obviously Superman's, you know, kryptonite is his kryptonite, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But also, we also know that his other kryptonite in the series is magic. So Yeah, would you think the staff was basically magic in this like that's it, like that's the only thing I can think of is the reason why he can be taken down by this, and he almost loses his powers for a period of time as well when Talia does use the staff on him. Do you think it was a bit much or just normal for the series?
We talk about this a lot when we review some of these Superman episodes, and I'm sure you've probably, as a fan of the Man of Steel, you've probably run into the same issue is the writers have to write these episodes, and with a character who one of his superpowers is invulnerability, you run into issues with, all right, well, how are we going to make a layman, a guy who doesn't really have superpowers, any sort of threat for Superman? So in this sense, obviously the writers wanted to cross over with a guy whose superpower is that he's very old. He's somewhat immortal. Now that doesn't have anything to do with invulnerability. He's just immortal because he keeps using this pit to keep himself alive. So how are you going to make him? And as we learn, he's a decrepit old man in this episode. He's in a wheelchair because these pits aren't working anymore. So how are you going to make him a threat to a man who can move planets and has taken on, you know, aliens from other worlds and, you know, everything we've seen prior to this in Superman? So I think the easiest route to go, and sometimes it's a detriment, I think it's fine in this episode. Magic is sort of the catch-all. If we make it magic, then Superman's effect, you know, he's not invulnerable to magic. So we can say that this affects him that way. They don't really quite explain how Talia knows how to use it or what specifically caused her to know that this this would work on him this way. I think she mentions in some of the dialogue at the beginning some of the rumors about the power of the staff, but how she knew how to use it, I don't know. But hey, it's a catch-all, and it lets the episode happen, so I'm okay with it in this sense. Yeah, magic seems to be the culprit, and if you chalk it up to magic, then it kind of lets the episode happen without you scratching your head too much and pressing in, because otherwise, if it's not magic, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
No, and you look at a lot of the behind the scenes stuff with regards to the series, and the one thing they talk about is, you know, Superman is the strongest, you know, the hardest person to take down in the DC universe. The only way they can use that to talk episodic series is depower him. And I understand why they did that and why they had to do that. And I don't think it made the series any worse than what it was. Like, I thought, you know, I like the fact that they spoke about that earlier on, and then they spoke to the fans and said, this is our version of Superman. And that's the reason why you can have these episodes. Otherwise, you go into Justice League, for example, why do we need the Justice League when Superman can do it all himself?
Right,
and so I like the fact that's why they've gone down this stream, and you know, and the fact that he's not all powerful, but I like the fact that he can go up levels as well. So you know, you've seen a lot of episodes where he takes a punch and then you go, oh, I'm going to go to the net, you know, like the next gear, so to speak. So now we're going to step up to level two, then level three. So I like the fact that they do that in this series and moving forward to Justice League as well. I don't think you guys have covered the latest episode with Raj in Batman the Animated Series, because you're going in episodic order in the animated series, if I remember. But if you do remember your first time you watched it, so I think it was the episode called Showdown. Do you remember, did Raj actually look like he did when we first saw him in this episode, or being older, or were we just taking that in as, like we said, as we find it later in the episode, that the pool's not working?
Yeah, so the last time, yeah, that episode, it's funny, that episode actually, it's not really a Ra's al Ghul episode, it's actually mostly a flashback story focused on the DC character, Jonah Hex. Batman and Robin find like an audio tape from Ra's al Ghul, and he's sort of recanting this story about like this Old West adventure that Ra's was involved in, but it's really a Jonah Hex story. And then at the very end, it kind of is tied in. But no, the last time we see Ra's in the original animated series, he still very much looks like kind of like he does when he starts to explain that the pits aren't working. But when I first burst out of the pit, he has the kind of mostly dark hair still, and with just kind of the white around sides and the sharper goatee and all of that. So yeah, this was definitely a shock, I think, and actually I think maybe goes back to what we were talking about earlier, when you kind of talk him up as, you know, the great Ra's al Ghul who controls the society of assassins, and he's more dangerous than anyone we've ever come up against. And then when you see him, he's this old frail man looking like he's on death's door. I think that's also kind of a nice, like, visual juxtaposition with what we've, if you're less familiar with the character, or even if you are familiar with the original animated series and then you're seeing him now, either way it's kind of a shock when you've been told that this guy is like this great conquering immortal, you know, mastermind, and then you see this, you know, frail old man in a wheelchair.
I think that's good for this series, but the fact that, like I said, if you had watched it from the start, from Batman the Animated Series, now you've finally seen Ra's again, even for someone who's gone back and watched it again going, I like the fact that what they've done to the character, the fact that they got, even you're probably thinking as well, how did this happen? And I love the fact that they talk about that, as we'll talk about in a second.
Yeah, absolutely. It was good to get, because as of the last time we saw Ra's al Ghul, he was still, you know, very much himself and still at full strength, so to speak. So the fact that they do pick up, you know, some years later and see him in this state and explain that the Lazarus pit that he's been using for years or so is finally stopped allowing him to cheat death, and now he kind of has to find a new way to do it. I think that and that's also, I think, a good way of like making it make sense that Ra's al Ghul would come after Superman, like, when, you know, previously there maybe wouldn't be a great reason, but the idea that he's so desperate to stay alive, despite having already lived for so long, that he is now kind of looking to mysticism and other ways to sort of steal the strength of this all-powerful being.
It's funny you mentioned that, because I want to bring that up a little bit later with regards to why they chose Superman. But just going back to Batman and his detective work, I love the fact a little bit earlier when him and Superman are looking in the warehouse and they see some tire tracks, and then Batman goes, looks like a wheelchair. And then we see Ra's in the wheelchair. I thought, this is great.
Yes. We actually do. It's, you know, it is a, I think, something of a in more modern takes on Batman and television and film, but we do actually get to see him being that great, the world's greatest detective throughout his own series and here in Superman.
No, it's good to see. So as we discussed before, Liam, with regards to the fact that the pits are no longer working, this is obviously the reason why it's gone after the shaman stuff. But I'll talk a little bit later as well. Why do you think they chose Superman? Do you think it's just because he's the all and powerful? If it can't be him, then no one else is going to work? Or
yeah, it seemed to me like they were kind of saying, I mean, we have the moment where he sort of, you know, very villainously sort of leans into camera and says, I need your strength. So it seems like he, you know, is feeling like it's one of those things where we don't see if they tested the staff on like a regular underling and it didn't do anything, or it didn't make him young enough or something, or didn't make him strong enough. So they feel like they need this superpowered being to do it, or if it's just that he felt like, well, if I'm going to use this, I might as well drain life from the most powerful, but, you know, at least to this point in the DCAU, the most powerful being we've ever seen.
It actually reminds me of an episode. I can't remember the actual name of the episode. It's season 4 episode of Lois and Clark, where the I don't know if you guys have seen it. It's an episode where there's a lady who uses her device to like turn and like an older person young, and at the end of the episode, like, Jimmy Olsen gets turned into, like, you know, Jack Larson, actually, like, you know, he gets turned into that character in that episode, and then needs Superman to actually use it to turn Jimmy back, which I thought was funny. And just because that was also an episode when Lois was worried about, you know, spending the rest of her time with Superman, and Superman doesn't age, and that was her, I'm going to get older and Superman's not, but apparently after this, some lives have been taken off Superman's life, but anyway, my mind just goes everywhere.
But that's a great connection there. I love that. Yeah, I haven't seen any of that shows, but that, like, I get the connection there. That's pretty awesome. And I do love the parallel there that idea of Superman not really being aging. Cause we see, like, the when the staff does get used later on in the episode, that even though it gives Ra's all this power, and he's, you know, he's doubled in size and he gets all these veins and stuff like that, that really it doesn't de-age Superman all that much. I guess it zapped his strength, but it really hasn't zapped his age or his youth from him, or at least none that we can really tell visually. So yeah, that is an interesting concept there about that Lois and Clark relationship.
Now, going back to what we talked about before with Lois and Bruce, like obviously going back to World's Finest, you know, they had a relationship together. Bruce just happens to he knows where Lois lives. but obviously, I think everyone forgets, well, not everyone forgets, I'm sure you guys don't, but, you know, Dana DeLady and Kevin Conroy have actually, you know, worked together before, and not in Batman the Animated Series, not in this series, but in Batman Mask of the Phantasm. That's where they first come together, and I think you find they actually work really well together, Cal. Like, I think, you know, and from all reports, and I love the movie, I think everyone think that's one of the best Batman movies ever, but just their relationship together, and I think that's why they brought it onto the series as well, knowing that fact.
Yeah, I would guess we know that the same voice caster, the person that was responsible for voice casting, the great Andrea Romano, was responsible for all of the DCAU shows. So a lot of times you saw her, she would cast somebody in one show or one episode, and then later on in a totally different series, they would pop up as a different character. That happened several different times. And a lot of times it's interesting because, it might be a minor character in one series, and then they would pop up as maybe a lead character in another series. But for this is obviously, Dana DeLaney was the main villain, and Batman's love interest in Mask of the Phantasm. And then also then pops up, now she's Superman's love interest for the duration of, you know, Superman, and then into Justice League as well. So she's a tremendous actress, and the fact that there was probably a witnessing of the chemistry that she had with Bruce, and then ultimately obviously her chemistry with Tim Daly, and then ultimately George Newbern, who takes over the Superman role for the Justice League, is she clearly was able to work with people very well. And they trusted her to really be able to express not only her own emotions, but to really take on this character. And it is her, she doesn't do that much different than I feel like her performance in Mask of the Phantasm, but I think that she's able to differentiate enough with the chemistry with Bruce. It's a lot, it feels like a lot softer, deeper, truer romance between Andrea in Mask of the Phantasm and Bruce versus Lois and Batman, or Lois and Bruce. There's that romance there, but at times it just feels like Lois is attracted to him because he's like the bad boy. It's not like a true romance. It's not love. He's the bad boy, so she's interested in the bad boy that, you know, that she shouldn't be interested in. It's not good for her. And ultimately, that's probably why things didn't work out for her.
Well, that goes to you, Liam, the fact that, you know, Erica Durant is your Lois Lane. She falls in love with every bad boy in Smallville. So it definitely tracks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's clearly, I think there's something to that. But before, maybe later in even in this series, or certainly in Smallville, or I think a lot of portrayals, yes, you see, before she ultimately, you know, would find, you know, the true love of her life in Superman and Clark, that she kind of goes for the complete opposite of everything that he is in a lot of ways, with especially in this series when we see her and her fling with Bruce Wayne, and then even here in this episode when they kind of have that conversation where she, you know, she still sort of talks about thinking about what if, you know, what if she had, you know, picked up the phone and gone to Gotham with him and you know, life and moved away from Metropolis, you know, and that kind of thing. So it is, you do always get that feeling that, you know, at least prior to finding that love with Superman and Clark, that you do wonder if she is, you know, she's kind of always thinking of the what if she had, you know, maybe taken a different path in life, in this case with Batman.
And the fact she's pouring her heart out to Bruce, like you said before, and then she turns around and Batman does the normal, he's gone.
Classic Batman.
And that's the last time we see Lois in this episode. I thought she just poured out her heart and that's it. Bang. See you later. We'll see you tomorrow, Dana. We'll get rest.
That's right.
But as we said earlier on, Alfred's back.
That's right.
And he's got the results from the particle. The thing I found funny is that when Batman picked up this particle in Lois's apartment, it seemed to be not like a liquid. It seemed to be like a salt, like a almost like a cloth-like object. But it appears to be jet fuel, not just jet fuel from anything. It's from apparently a private plane. How good is their technology to pick it up, not just the fuel, but the fact it's from a private plane?
I was going to say, I didn't really, that might be a true fact, but I had never heard anything about private planes using specialized jet fuel before. I kind of always thought jet fuel was jet fuel, but you know, I'm not an aviation expert, so I don't know. I could very easily be wrong about that.
You got the wrong guest on this podcast. Yeah. Aviation, we don't have the insight to deliver that. Only pure speculation will you hear on aviation and technology in the aviation industry from us here at the DCAU Review.
Has the Batcave upgraded since the Batman the Animated Series? Like, did they have that technology back in that series, or has it grown?
It's certainly the same computer. The computer was the one stylized off of the original Batman the Animated Series computer. So if it has, it's not. He must have always had it, I guess. I don't know.
So next thing we come into, we see that Superman's been captured. Like I said, I think he must have lost his powers at some, because they had that neck brace on him, and then eventually he comes free. So it's very similar to when Parasite took his powers away, back in late season one, season two, within time, he gets his powers back. And then, Talia uses the staff on him again. I love when Batman arrives, the Batman theme, or parts of the Batman theme were playing over in the background, which I absolutely loved how they have it in this episode. Do you love the confrontation here between, the staff's been used on Raj now, so we see him. Is he a lot bigger from taking the strength than he was in the Batman the Animated Series?
Yeah, he like grows a foot too, I think. Like
he looks like Bane. He looks like Bane almost.
He very much has that body type.
Yeah, he's like double the size. He's like grows a foot and a half. He's got all these giant veins popping out of his arms, and he's a big boy.
And just like everybody else, he just wants more. So he just wants power and
strength.
I like how, like when the fight between him and Batman start to ensure, even Talia goes, "Don't kill him." Like I like that respect there between the two characters.
Yeah, it's interesting that, and that's kind of I don't know if they even mention it in this episode, but they mention that the Lazarus Pits have sort of, they give him this youth, but also they've sort of driven him mad. Or at least temporarily, when he comes out of the pits, he's very, very out of control. That's something we definitely see in the animated series.
Yeah.
And it feels like he's kind of getting that mania is kind of hitting him as he's gaining Superman's powers, and he's crying out that he wants more and more. And so when Batman comes to sort of disrupt things, and Talia is very taken aback because they haven't seen each other, I guess, in a very long time. Within the timeline of these shows, but it's also interesting because previously, as mentioned, he's always been portrayed as this very sort of proper sort of swashbuckling, uses a sword type of villain when he does get into combat himself. That's if he even bothers raising a hand at all. So it was interesting to see him sort of be, I guess, so drunk on Superman's power that he had absorbed that he's sort of swinging wildly and really kind of running at him like more animalistic, I guess, more like Incredible Hulk like than definitely anything that we saw from the kind of the finesse and this brilliant strategic mind that we've seen in the animated series to that point. So even though he's not using the Lazarus Pits anymore, he still seems to have that kind of side effect of when he gets his youth back, it seems to kind of snap something in his mind a little bit.
Yeah, and you see the fight between him and Batman. It kind of takes Batman down, and then as he's about to confront Superman, I love this little part here. Like this is where I thought, Superman used his brain rather than his brawn. And the fact that even with all that, as you spoke about, Liam, with all that those negativity going through the Lazarus Pit, but then he still chose Talia. He still chose to save Talia. And Cal, I'll put this to you. Joker would never save Harley, would he? Like, he would just, he'd just run off and leave her for dead. Just same, just same with Lex wouldn't save Mercy. He just goes off and, you know, but the fact that, you know, even with everything going on, Raj still wants to save his daughter, I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, and that ultimately, and that's a characteristic of that character that's pretty faithful to the comic books, and certainly to the very first time that we meet him in Batman the Animated Series, is that he has this deep love for his daughter, and he wants her to, you know, he wants her. I mean, the whole setup for the first episode that he appears in, a spoiler alert, is that he wants Bruce to marry her, and that's like he wants them to rule the world together, essentially. So he has a deep seated love, like any father, I assume, has for their child. And the fact that Clark thinks about it in that moment and recognizes, hey, I'm not going to beat him in my weakened state with my fists. I can't. I've been zapped here. I don't have the strength yet. I haven't recovered fully yet. So I have to figure out some way to distract him and to hope that, you know, something else will, or maybe give him enough time for Bruce to wake up or something. But I'm not going to be able to take him down here. It's just not going to work. So for him to use his brain at that point, appeal to that love that he's clearly noticed, that he assumed, I guess, because he didn't really have that much interaction with Ra's directly, but he sees the love that Talia has for her father, so assumes that it's a two-way street there, and notices and said, all right, well, I'm going to appeal to this. I'm going to send Ra's and hope, you know, mention that, hey, your daughter's in a precarious position here. You might want to think about trying to save her. And the fact that it works proves that, hey, he's not only is he the world's strongest man, but hey, he's also pretty smart too. Okay, when he uses that brain, puts that brain to use, he's pretty brilliant also.
Yeah, I loved how he did it in nighttime as well. That was my favorite.
Yeah,
and same with, you know, the late Mr. Kent. There was more of that as well. So we know that he's capable.
Absolutely.
But as you mentioned before, like even Batman brings it up to Clark at the end of the episode. You know, smart thinking of using Talia like that, but yeah, they both fall down into the river, and then, you know, Clark uses his x-ray vision and I can't see them, so we don't know if they live or die. I don't think we see them again, definitely not in this series, but I don't think they're even mentioned in the Justice League or my recollections anyway.
Mm-hmm. So they do, there is an episode of Batman Beyond called Out of the Past.
Okay.
That features Talia at the very least, and we find out a little bit more about some other adventures that Batman had going up against them later on. We don't see those adventures, but we do find out about some of them as Talia sort of reappears in that series in the future. But yeah, as far as you know, prime Bruce Wayne Batman taking on Ra's and Talia, this is the last time at least we see it on screen. There was certainly some tie-in comics and things that sort of use those characters a little bit more. But yeah, as far as these characters go for the screen here, yeah, this is Ra's and Talia and his Ra's assistant Ubu. We also see him in the in the cave there at the end. This was really their one and only on-screen appearance in this you know, Superman / the new Batman adventures era of the DCAU.
Yeah, and it almost reminded me of the end of Superman 2. Yeah, when you see the villains fall in and you just don't know whether they'll live or die. in the Australian version of Superman 2, we actually saw the villains actually walking out of the fortress.
I've seen that footage. I never knew if it was from like a televised version or a deleted scene or something where like the cops or the Arctic police or whatever are leading Zod and whoever else out to the jail, to paddy wagon or whatever.
it always freaked me out, because for me that was more, and at the end of that movie, like, Superman destroys the fortress. And I'm going, okay. And then when I see Superman 4 and he's gone back to the fortress, I'm like, what the hell's going on? and then when they brought the movies out on DVD, I'm going, to my head back then, I didn't know anything about director's cut and all this other stuff. But yeah, I still want it. Like, I've seen deleted footage and deleted scenes of this being on Blu-rays now, and we can see that, but yeah, I definitely want them to do a director's cut of Superman 2 to bring it back to the movie I remember. Because even watching it now, there's scenes where I listen to it, it doesn't even sound the same. And I'm going, this isn't Superman 2 that I grew up with. But I loved it on this episode. So if going back to nighttime, Superman pretty much goes to Gotham to save Bruce. Where in this episode, you could almost do the reversal. Batman at the end has come in to save Superman. So I like how they reverse the the fortunes of these characters in this episode.
Yeah, and we kind of get that dialogue at the end of Tim Daly and Kevin Conroy playing off each other, and Superman kind of offers up that maybe there's something to this this team up stuff that we've been doing for the last couple of times, and Batman kind of shrugs it off. But yeah, especially when you look at this series as a part of what this larger DC animated universe, knowing that a few short years later, Justice League would be begin airing, and we would see that series starts with Batman and Superman teaming up, and then as the threat sort of gets bigger and bigger, they end up teaming up with even more heroes to bring down this alien invasion in the first episodes of Justice League. So it's funny that even though maybe that wasn't even a glimmer in the eye of the creators of these series actually doing a full Justice League show just yet, they did kind of throw that line in there that retroactively kind of works as a little building block for what would become the Justice League and Justice League Unlimited series.
Yeah, we call those retroactive Easter eggs on our program. Like things that later on are like, were they actually alluding to a potential full Justice League show? And it's like, no, they definitely weren't, because that didn't happen for four more years and two series in between this that they worked on. But actually, it works now. So you can kind of retroactively say, yeah, it's an Easter egg. They're alluding to the future Justice League there. Isn't that cool?
I was going to say the other Justice League Easter egg for me in this episode is that in just that last act, Batman's ears are super long. Like he looks
his ears
way
kept
more
getting
like
longer each scene. I felt like it was like, did they just have a bet to see if each scene they could make longer and longer to see if anybody would catch it?
By the end there, when he's fighting Ra's and then he's standing next to Superman. Yeah. He looks, if you put the blue highlight on the cape and cowl and the gloves, you'd look like the Justice League model for Batman.
Or Kelly Jones drawing. Yeah, Kelly Jones drawing from the 1990s Batman series and the Nightfall era Batman with the covers.
Just keep getting them longer. Yep.
it was surprising, like you said, they probably had a joke with each other saying, hey, we'll see if anyone notices. I'll give you a five, but talking about Easter eggs, I was going to ask that question about both of you as regards, do you think that was planned? And we all look back at it now and go, no, it just so happens that it did happen later on. And you can look at it now and go, oh, this is all happy planned action. Out.
But, yep, it's a lot.
And I'll go back to Superman 4 at the end when Superman goes to Lexi in 20, and then 20 years later, Superman returns. So it's all meant to be.
That's right. Yeah, and I think they had maybe kicked around some basic ideas for a Justice League at this point. Actually, I think the original, one of the very early pitches when Superman the Animated Series was coming into fruition, I think one of the pitches was sort of the concept that ended up coming into the Batman Brave and the Bold show, where they had this idea that Superman would team up with a bunch of individual heroes over a season, and then they do like a Justice League at the end of that. So I'm sure there was, sort of vague designs on maybe we'll do a Justice League one day, but yeah, I don't think anything was concrete some, two or three years out still from Justice League debuting by the time this episode aired. But it's fun to look at that now and go, oh, right, there in fact was something to this this partnership thing, as we would come to find out.
I'm not sure if you guys spoke about it on your podcast, but I remember when I first started to talk about season one of Superman the Animated Series, how the original plan was actually to animate like a 40s design, and if they would have went down that style, I don't think we would have seen Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. Maybe we would have, might have been a different Superman, I'm not sure, but I'm glad they went down the street. And for more reports, it's also they didn't want to you know, they didn't want to interfere with the Fleischer cartoons. They didn't want to, they wanted to leave that in its own time frame. And we all love that animation style. And it still is beautiful to this day. And I love the fact that they just decided to stick with what we have. And we wouldn't have what we had today. And wouldn't have your awesome podcast as well, talking about all these great episodes. So, yeah, I'm glad they stuck with the years that they portrayed Superman in.
Yeah, absolutely. This show, Superman the Animated Series, is hugely important to the visual identity of the DC animated universe, you know, everything that came after, from the fourth season of Batman, the new Batman Adventures, to Beyond, to shows like, if these shows could all look very different, hadn't decided on this, you know, very sort of, you know, simplified, but still very angular and kind of retro, like almost like a retro 60s futuristic look to Metropolis and all that. The buildings and architecture and things that they chose to do in the background as well. Like this could all look very different if this show had stuck with that original idea of doing another sort of retro 40s show like they had done with the original Batman, the animated series. So yeah, this show becomes a huge linchpin to kind of everything that comes afterwards.
No, exactly. I totally agree. And you know, and we wouldn't still be talking about it today. So, and we'll keep going, which is fantastic. So that completes this week's episode. So what I'd like to do now, Carl and Liam, is just asking your opinion. Is this an episode that you'd happily rewatch? And would something you'd introduce someone to the series and go, this is a great stepping stone? Knowing the fact that it's probably not the best episode to start with, knowing with the back series of everything that's going on, but would you just rewatch this tomorrow if you had the opportunity?
I would. I think all the crossover episodes, and we may have mentioned that when we were on here covering Nighttime, but all the crossover episodes are, to me, are must watches because they're just so fun. You get everything interacting, and you get these different pieces that usually don't see interacting with one another. And obviously this is pre-Justice League. So this is the opportunity that you get to see Superman interact with Batman on a regular basis. And these characters and these villains that you don't always get a chance to see, even in the comics, interact with Batman or Superman, these rogues gallery crosses here. So I think for that reason, yes. As far as introducing it, I think the best way for me to do this is to kind of rank the crossover episodes, maybe. I think World's Finest still probably holds the top spot for me. Just because it has the Joker and Luthor in it. Such a great episode. And I know Liam was on here to discuss it with you in the past. A great review from both of you guys. And then I would say that Nighttime, just because of the fun that comes with that, of Superman dressing up as Batman. And then I think this would be of the Superman crossovers, this would end up being there. Obviously there's a Supergirl crossover with Batman the Animated Series that occurs, but I think this would probably fall the bottom of those three crossovers, but still very fun and enjoyable for me at least.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny, and there's actually kind of a little musical allusion to that at the very end of this episode. But when these were airing in the States, they didn't. It wasn't like at 9 a.m. it's Superman the Animated Series, and then 9:30 it's Batman. It would air in a block called The New Batman Superman Adventures.
Yeah.
And every episode, whether it was a Superman or a Batman, had this sort of like joint intro with its own sort of original theme composed by the late great Shirley Walker. And so actually at the very end of this episode, they play that theme as the bat plane takes off and Superman flies away. They kind of bring that theme in, and has these really tremendous, I love the percussion in that. It's such a beautiful piece of music. And I always loved that because it's the Batman Superman Adventures, but most of the time it was either a Superman adventure or a Batman adventure. Yep. So when it was the Batman Superman Adventures on a Saturday morning on Kids WB, and it's actually Batman and Superman having an adventure together, it was so cool and so exciting. So I think that's, as Cal said, all of the crossovers have a really special place in my heart. And I would definitely, even though, as Cal said, maybe you would recommend a World's Finest first or even Nighttime because of kind of the unique nature of that one, I think this one was this would definitely be on my list for ones you gotta watch if you just want to pick kind of the cream of the crop of Superman the Animated Series.
Well, it's funny you're talking about the Batman Superman Adventures. When I was doing some research, I found the intro to that, and this is how stupid I am. I actually went, there's a series? What? obviously there was none of that in Australia. Obviously, I've later learned what you just said before. It was just the intro, and then they had a different separate episode. But well, I saw the intro and went, this intro was fantastic. Well, I've got to find this series. It's a conclusion to both this and all that. And then I found out it didn't exist. I was depressed.
Yeah, they kind of it would just be an episode of Batman or an episode of Superman most of the time, but it aired under the name in here in the US as the new Batman Superman Adventures Together. I guess the rest of the second season of Superman, and then that fourth season of Batman, when they kind of redesigned those characters. So yeah, it's funny though, but when they, which is why I got very, very got a lot of emotion when I heard that percussion come in and the new Batman and Superman Adventures theme kicked in there at the very end of the episode. It's like, what a great punctuation to a very fun adventure that we just witnessed.
Yeah, and that's what you want throughout these episodes, and also leading into Justice League, just hearing the theme from your favorites, you know, your show, like hearing snippets of Superman the Animated Series or Batman the Animated Series, or like you said, Batman Superman Adventures, and it just gets you warm and fuzzy and just gets excited to want to watch those episodes. I agree with you both entirely with this episode. Who doesn't love a team up, especially with Batman? You know, it's just so much fun watching those two together. You can just see, you know, Tim and Kevin had so much fun together. You know, unfortunately, we didn't see them together in Justice League, but I like the fact they came together later on in some of the movies later on down the track. So a question for both of you. Would you have liked to see more characters crossover from Batman the Animated Series, or do you think we saw enough, you know, of the crossovers from those particular characters?
I think, you know, it's hard to go back and rewrite history sometimes. Yeah. You know, I think if you had another season of maybe both of these shows, it would have been interesting, especially, you know, I won't spoil it for your listeners, but we know how the Superman the Animated Series ends, and that sort of leads to some of the stories that get picked up in Justice League. And ultimately Justice League Unlimited, those play huge roles down the road. So I think it would have been fun to see additional episodes of both of these and see these characters cross over and maybe just have specific Batman Superman stories. But ironically, the very first episode of Justice League, for the majority of part one of the three-part intro, it's kind of a Batman Superman crossover, because it's them working together and kind of doing some detective work. And there's the other heroes don't get introduced until very late into that, or very early into that second part. So you kind of get some of that satisfaction, I think, in the Justice League episodes. Even in one of the probably best episodes of Justice League Unlimited, you get a Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman story with for the Man Who Has Everything. And so you do get some more of those stories, those interactions between Bruce and Clark later on. I think it would have been cool, of course, just to have some solo stories just with the two of them together, or crossing over and seeing other Batman villains interact with Superman, or Batman get to start interacting with more of Superman's rogues, because we really don't get much of that. We get a lot of Superman interacting with Batman's, but not Batman interacting with Superman. So I think that would have been interesting to see for sure. But I'm happy and satisfied kind of what they ultimately did with Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, because those stories played off of so many of the threads from both of these, both Batman and Superman stories. So, I feel like they did them justice pretty well.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
I would mostly just echo what Cal just said. It would have, you know, there's something where I think about, like, it would have been cool to get like the full Bat family and Superman family of characters together for one kind of big joint adventure. If you get, you know, Supergirl and Steel and Nightwing and Robin and Batgirl, you know, along with Batman and Superman for some sort of massive crossover like that, that could have been really fun or something like that. But yeah, as Cal said, knowing that we had those future adventures to come with a bunch of other characters introduced in Justice League, and at the end of the day, maybe it makes it a little bit more special that you know, along with the girls night out episode of the new Batman Adventures where Batgirl and Supergirl team up, we only had these sort of three team ups. So maybe it just made the crossovers feel a little bit more special because there aren't too many of them.
No, and that's just it. And I think what we saw later on in Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, as Cal was saying before, it was a good finish line to end up with. And I think we're all grateful for what we did get in the end. And who knows, you know, there's still people crying out to bring back Justice League. And, you know, if we keep crying out for it, you know, Snyder Cut, you know. We know it will happen. But, yeah, just hopefully. And then, you know, it gives us more correspondence to work with. So bring it on.
Absolutely.
I'm loving it. So just before we finish up, so I'm just going to do a little bit of trivia thanks to the DC Animated Universe Wiki. So as we spoke about earlier on, we all know that Olivia Hussey replaces Helen Slater as the voice of Talia. So Ra's and Talia Al Ghul's last appearance in the DC Animated Universe, Ra's returns in Talia's body in the Batman Beyond episode. Is that the one you're talking about before, Liam?
Yeah, I didn't want to spoil that plot twist in case any of your listeners hadn't seen Batman Beyond yet, but yes, Ra's, we are introduced to Talia, who then later turns out to be Ra's al Ghul inside of Talia's body.
Ah, interesting.
It's a very eerie episode.
And as you mentioned before, Liam, so the theme for the new Batman Superman Adventures is briefly heard at the end. I'm going to go back and have a listen, and then I'm going to find the intro on YouTube again, and I'm going to put this on my phone as a ringtone. I think this is going to replace my Superman animated series ringtone for just a little bit, and then we'll just keep changing them around.
There you go.
In the Batman the Animated Series episode Avatar, Ra's leaves Talia to die as he searches for the scrolls of Thoth Kapera. In this episode, he chooses to save her rather than get revenge on Superman. So, yeah, a little bit different there.
I think the distinction there is Superman breaks the staff. So yeah. If the staff was still whole, Ra's would have been more conflicted about what to do there and may have also ultimately chosen the staff over his daughter. But because, as Superman kind of lays it out, the only choice is, well, you can stay here and beat me up for breaking your staff, or you can save your daughter's life. Since the battle is already lost for Ra's at that point, he chooses to save his daughter. I think that's maybe the distinction between that and Avatar.
Nice. So is there anything else, Oliver, you want to bring up about this episode that we've missed, or anything you want to add?
No, I think this is a blast. I think all of these crossovers, as you mentioned, are a lot of fun, regardless of, I hadn't seen this episode in quite a long time. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, we haven't gotten to it in our series yet. And I hadn't seen it in several years, probably since they came out on DVD the first time. So it was a great refresher. It was a lot of fun. And really any of these crossover episodes are just that, like it's playing around with your action figures in a toy box, essentially, and just seeing what happens. This is what you did as a kid, and these are the stories that you came up with of crossovers, and then they finally happened on your screen and they were really cool. So I loved this, Nathan, so much. Thank you so much for having us on. Every time we get the chance to come on and chat with you, it's a treat, man. Love being on here with you.
No, I love having both of you guys on as well, and you guys have so much knowledge of the DCAU, and having you guys on here, it's just so much fun, and I love talking to you guys. I know we have time differences, and that's a bit of a, you know, but it doesn't matter what time of the day it is. I'm always there for you guys and vice versa. I can't appreciate enough you guys coming on.
Absolutely.
So I think we discussed a bit earlier with regards to what's next on the DCAU review. Is there anything else that you want to give anyone a bit more about, or did we pretty much cover it all at the start of the episode?
We're still a few episodes away from that big 200th review. We've got some a fun idea for, I think it'll actually be episode 199 that'll tie into the release of the Batman live action film that is coming out in March. I think we have a fun idea to kind of tie in a review to that, and then we also, I think actually this upcoming month of February, we'll actually be talking about Superman again for the first time in a while. So looking forward to looking at a few adventures, and as Cal sort of talked about at the beginning here, maybe trying out some of those character spotlights and other sort of fun ways we've started to kind of experiment with is exploring stuff we've already talked about before. So excited to get to all of that as we are on the road to our 200th episode here.
Nice. And leading into that, so where can everyone find you guys to not only love your work, but also follow you online?
Absolutely. So you can check us out on our website, dcaureview.com. You can also, of course, follow us on social media at dcaureview. Liam does an amazing job, runs our Twitter, and we both do our Instagram. You can follow us on there. We have a Facebook page, but not a lot of people, not a lot of traction on Facebook these days. So if you're looking to interact with us, check us out on Twitter and or Instagram. And then we're pretty much on all the most popular podcast apps, Spotify, Apple, Google, we Anchor is our host, so you can check us out there if you want to. And yeah, we love interacting with people. One of the most fun things that Liam and I always say on our podcast, and we try and really get across, is that the most fun for us is interacting with people. Like, we love talking about these cartoons, obviously, but we also love hearing people's thoughts back. We love being able to interact with people like you, Nathan, that are, you know, fellow fans of the DCAU and have specific love for specific characters, and being able to trade thoughts and talk about specific episodes. Like, this is our dream. Like, this is, we love doing this. We don't get paid for this, but this is a hobby that we like to do. But you know, the enjoyment of that comes from interacting with people and kind of sharing our love and the love that other people have for this universe with each other. So yeah, thanks again for having us on. We love it.
No, it's greatly appreciated as always. And all their details will be in the show notes below. So please go and follow them. Cal said, on social media, Liam puts a lot of good stuff on Twitter, and we constantly talk, and same with Cal. And, and if you missed it, both the guys as well put in their top five episodes for Superman the Animated Series. So go back and have a listen to episode 50 if you haven't previously. And yeah, it was interesting where they're all finished up there in the top five episodes of Superman the Animated Series. But as for me, if you want to find the podcast, you can go on Twitter. It's Sup Animated Pod, or you can go on my page at The M-Word 81. You can find us on Facebook at The M-Word 81. Or you can go to the webpage, www.themword81.com. Or you can send us an email at themword81@yahoo.com. So, Cal and Liam, again, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast. As always, it is so much fun talking to you guys. You guys are a ball of fun. I know that we could talk for hours about anything, not just DCAU, but, you know, comic book, DC. You know, I think we could be here for hours. And I think we just love talking to each other. And I'm so glad to have found your podcast. And just to be able to meet you guys and virtually in person is a dream. And thanks so much for coming on board. I can't wait to have you guys on again in the future.
Same here. Absolutely. It's always a blast talking to you, Nathan. We love being on your show. We love listening to your show, and we love having you on our show as well. And definitely have some ideas of something that we want to work with on with you, and then a lot of other DCAU podcasters and content creators coming up. So if you come over to our feed, you'll probably hear Nathan's voice before too long, hopefully. So definitely will love love talking to you and working with you in any capacity.
No, absolutely love it. Thanks again, guys. Once again, thank you for listening. Tune in next time for more of Superman the Animated Podcast. The new theme music for Superman the Animated Podcast is called Super Epic by Alexander Nakaranda. You can find this at serpentsoundstudios.com, and the music is promoted by chozik.com.